Hello, Belinda.
Hi, Omar.
What is this week's gratitude blooming theme?
It's card number 18, the daisies, representing simplicity.
I love how when people look at the art for this card, it's these two daisies that you're looking kind of from a bird's eye view down, and then they almost look like eyes. And the conversation that we have with this week's guest, SJ Hazim, who's this creator, artist, someone whose work called Creative Pathways and Means is really helping organizations and teams really find that deep inspiration, and how inspiration is really the catalyst for motivation and connection and getting things done in the world. But it just begins with that simplicity, and his connection to these plants is amazing.
Yeah, my favorite part of the conversation was when he was reflecting on the artwork and what the daisies were telling him. And he was like, oh my gosh, they're looking at me and they're saying, we're rooting for you.
Yeah, it was. Watch out, people. There may be a t-shirt in your future with two daisies looking up saying, we're rooting for you, because that's really what we believe gratitude blooming is about, is that nature is rooting for us. Like, we're rooting for you, and we know that you're rooting for us. And how much better can life be than that? It's as simple as that.
Yes. And wow, the conversation took so many different turns. I did not expect us to go back to our hip hop roots, Omar. And wow, that was a blast from the past.
Mid-80s came back strong, and that sort of really beginning days, and just even remembering De La Soul, and they had a song called Daisies. There was so many fun, serendipitous moments in this conversation. We can't wait for you to hear more.
Wow. So I'm going to tell you something about this card. Simplicity is the ultimate sophistication. So if you get to a point where you overcomplicate things, do all this other type of stuff, what happens is you leave people in confusion.
So just describe the art as you see it. So like when you look at these two daisies, literally just describe what you see. Like don't even interpret yet. Just describe what you see.
So what I'm seeing here is a connection. I'm seeing connection within nature. And depending on how you want to look at it, I mean, I see eyes looking at me. As I'm looking at these daisies, I see these daisies reflecting back, looking at me, just from some of the way the artwork is. And from what I see is almost like the veins in the plant, you know, I see that going to the other daisy, to where it's a collaborative effort. It's a collaboration here, to where we're growing together. So that's kind of what I'm seeing.
And how does it feel to have these daisies looking at you? And what do you think the daisies are seeing?
I'm not sure what they're saying, but for some reason, I think they're rooting for me. No pun intended.
Why are they rooting for you? What are they like? What are they cheering you on?
Being a community servant, being a father, being a husband, being all these different things, a business owner, there's a lot of stuff that happens. And, you know, with these daisies being deeply rooted into the earth and everything, you know, sometimes I feel that nature fills me. And so I believe that these daisies are rooting for me. You know, it's that saying, pushing up daisies. You know, somebody passes away or whatever, I'm still living. And these daisies know it, and they want me to live my best life. So I believe these daisies are rooting for me to live my best life. So I want to live it.
Now, as we look at the prompt, if you were to simplify your life, what would you choose to keep? You said you're wearing these mini hats, some hats you've put on yourself, some hats society has put on you, some hat, you know, just circumstances. But if you could choose, you know, to simplify your life, what would you keep?
I would keep the business that I'm a part of, Creative Pathways and Means, most definitely. I might do something different with the nonprofit as far as my volunteerism nonprofit, just because getting to the point where we're reaching capacity, you know, and nobody is being paid for it. I haven't been able to pay my acting ED. We've been at it for about 3 years. So kind of feel that something might happen there. It's hard for me to let a lot of things go because there's always so many people who depend on me. And I've just kind of taken up that mantle, see a need, feel a need. But I've been trying to get better at saying no. But I don't have anything specific besides maybe the nonprofit. I just know that's been putting a lot of weight on some different things. And I think that it served its purpose. We raised up the level of volunteers and how they go about it. So I don't know how much I get rid of.
I appreciate your honesty around that. I'm feeling the pain of that, of both of those things, you know, the energy of keeping something and then also feeling the tug of, okay, well, then I got to let this other thing go. And I'm curious to hear just your journey to even discovering what your business passion was. You know, how did you find it?
It happened as a child. And you know, it's such of a great question. So the very first time I ever felt inspiration was shortly after my grandmother had passed away. I come from a pretty big family, 4 brothers. I'm the youngest boy, 3 sisters. I have a younger sister. My grandmother lived with me when I was raised by both parents. I was really, I had a speech impediment. I was very introverted, very small child. Like my freshman year in high school, I was 5 foot, 100 pounds. So in elementary school, I was always, and even middle school, I was under 5 feet. I was 4 foot something, sometimes almost 3 foot something. But my grandmother was my best friend. I share everything with her, and she passed away suddenly. And the months and years that came to pass after that, which was only maybe about a year and a half before breakdancing came fully into my life. But the first time I saw it, I felt like my bones were on fire. I didn't know it was inspiration that I was feeling, but it was definitely, we describe it as a positive belief in a potential future. That's our definition for inspiration. So I'm trying to figure out things within myself at this point, because I'm like, this positive belief in a potential future is so heavy that it's outweighing my fear of judgment and my fear of ridicule. So I'm like, why am I wanting to learn this art form that's going to physically push me out in front of people to where I have to be seen doing these dance moves? Who is this guy? What's going on? But my inspiration fed into my motivation, which activated my determination, which made me want to convert this idea into an action and start creating dance moves by drafting off of people's platforms and looking at the greats, and then put my own spin in it. And then I had to figure out, I had to connect with people with a common interest and exchange value with them. So at that point, that's when it's time to show off these dance moves. And I decided to do it in front of my family. And when I did that, once you connect, you give people an experience. And then I had an experience. So it changed me. And I went outside and I danced for my best friend, and he begged me to teach him. So this framework, connection, or this framework, inspiration, motivation, creation, and connection, which gives people the experience, is the framework that I use to learn how to break dance. And we use this as our creativity model. We help people with a general framework on, especially people who might be scatterbrained, it helps them arrange things in their own minds, and they could do it on paper so they could see the process. So Creative Pathways and Means really came from that brainchild of a creativity model, which we're a creative company. So that's how that framework came about, and that's our crown jewel.
I love that. From inspiration to motivation to creation to connection. And in that way, I assume connection just in some ways births new inspiration. So
it's not a
circle, it's a spiral, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You're so on it.
And so you've had many spirals in your life, you know, and that was one, was just sort of breaking out of that fear of ridicule and judgment and spinning around on the ground when everybody, I remember those days, like that was like, for me, I moved to LA in 1984 and, you know, I remember everybody, like, cardboard became scarce because everybody was trying to find cardboard to lay on the ground, and you wanted it like thick cardboard because you were on concrete, you know? And I just remember there was those kids who could just like do those like spin wheels and like windmills. That's what they
were. Yeah. Windmills. Yeah.
And I still don't understand how people do windmills, but like it was just what I loved about it was this freedom moment because it was all being created. Like in some ways it was really hard to judge because there was no standard yet. You think about where hip hop has come now to like where last year the Super Bowl had Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre and all these rappers at Super Bowl, right? Like,
right.
And so you've grown up in this sort of culture now, you know, and I would say like, what have you learned about yourself from that early days, that early freedom to where now it's very mainstream? And, you know, is it a circle now or is it a spiral? Like, where do you see yourself in culture? Like, if culture's the daisies, culture's looking at you, SJ, and saying, hey, we rooted for you. What happened?
I will tell you this, man. This is such of a great podcast. I don't know what it is with y'all's questions, but y'all asking all the right ones. You know, I am staying true to the culture, and I got to share this because there's a lot of people who don't know this, but coming up in the culture, first of all, I was shy. Is I don't know what hip hop did so much for my confidence and my self-esteem. Because it's about being like a statue, being outstanding, standing out in your field, being outstanding in your field like a statue. You know, it's not about being a brick in the wall. It's about having confidence in who you are. I say, you know, really, you know, hip hop, breakdance type of things is really the only place where Martin Luther King's dream is really alive. Because at the end of the day, you don't care what color somebody is. You just want to see if they got the skill set. Can you get down or not? Can you rap or not? So where I'm at as far as hip hop, what hip hop allowed me to do, breakdancing and everything else, was to be true to myself, to be able to move how I need to move and not be judged by what I do, but yet just being able to express myself in different ways. And I believe I've stayed true to that. You know, I authentically express myself wherever I'm at in a respectful manner. You know, I mean, it's not just about doing whatever, but I believe hip hop is about encouraging people. You know, I believe it's about finding your voice and using your voice. And it's also about acceptance. It's not about telling people this. So I think the daisies that are looking at me as the culture, I think they're saluting me right now. Because there's some different things that I'm doing right now, which I would have never had the confidence to do if hip hop was not my foundation.
And what are those things that you would have been afraid to do before that you're doing now?
Leaving it all on the stage. Because even back then, I didn't leave it all on the stage. But, you know, created a program with an organization called Omni Circle. And Omni Circle Group, and it's called Authentic Expressions. It takes place every second Saturday at the nonprofit location. I have a group of poets. The very first time we did it was February 11th during Black History Month, and we had a gentleman come out named Cody Foster, who actually is a Fortune 100 owner, has a company called Advisors Excel. He said, I believe this was the missing element of DEI, and we want you to come to Advisors Excel and do this for all of my people. So basically that happened February 11th. And the night when I was, I did a lot of practice, but I practiced about 5 to 6 hours the night before. And I prayed before I did. And the word I got was, leave it all on the stage. And I didn't understand what it all meant, but I was on the stage screaming at different times because the poem called for that. I have never performed like that in front of anybody, in front of people, because I've screamed really loud when people wasn't around or whatever. But I mean, the way that I did this was true hip hop to the fullest, as far as to where you don't even care who's in the room. I'm going to give it all I got. And then after I did it, I spoke to the crowd and let them know I'm not mad. I'm not angry. These poems just have to be delivered a certain way for them to affect you how they will. So just being able to be bold and brave enough to actually let it all out.
I did not expect this podcast to go down the hip hop lane. But I've recently been re-listening to De La Soul because Trugoy recently passed away. And then I was just remembering De La Soul had the song Daisy Age, right?
Mm.
And it was right like my Daisy. I love daisies. I love Daisy. I love pushing up your favorite Daisy. This is Pasta Noose, a president of a paragraph. And, you know, it was just this idea that I think, let me see if I can like recall, but I believe DAISY was an acronym and it was short for the inner song. It's short for something. And the inner song, y'all. That's right. DAISY was short for the inner song, y'all. And so I love this full circle that De La Soul was like, even in the era of hip hop, which was probably a lot more street, you know, you had sort of this sort of like thug life kind of mentality and street cred. And they were like talking about daisies.
Right.
And this was like, you know, Trugoy, who passed away, his name backwards was Yogurt. And, you know, because it was about the culture, like yogurt has culture. And like, how do you flip culture on its head and you spell it backwards, right? Like Trugoy. And so we've learned so much about hip hop and how hip hop, you said, is like taught you. And we're now a few decades into this, you know, and where do you sort of see culture going, right? With everything that we've learned, the good, the bad, the ugly, right? What is the De La Soul for the next 20, 30 years?
I don't think there's will ever be another De La Soul, just because of what they did and how they did it was, I mean, you know, there's just some things that don't repeat like that. I mean, they're so original. Where hip hop is going in general, you know, the truth has always been in the music. Now, we might not have always liked the truth that's in the music. Of course, there's some perpetrators and there are people who will really put some things out there that might not be true. But like what the younger generation, a lot of people are putting out there. I mean, unfortunately, there's a lot of frustrations and people are dumping that out there and they're not really realizing how some of that stuff can come back. You know, some of the true artists, or I don't want to say true artists. I don't want to be like that. But some of the people who are more conscious, they realize you get back what you give out. So they'll try to put things out there more that will affect the community. TRS-One said this. He said, a rapper lifts up himself, an MC lifts up the community. You know, so you kind of see different things from the lyrical content. If somebody's out here really trying to give some gems so somebody else could get to point A to point B a little bit quicker, they'll do that. Other people might just represent Versace or, you know, Lamborghinis and everything else. But I think the truth is going to stay in the music. And unfortunately, some people's truth is out here living fast, maybe selling drugs, taking drugs. I mean, you know, we hear that a whole lot right now. So I think people are doing a lot of venting and there's a lot of identity crises out here. and hip hop in general. So I would like to see hip hop go more of a positive route.
Can you share a little bit about the pain that you feel in the community that you're in? And what is it that you are wanting to lift up right now? Like just real life, you know, on the ground, literally. What is that?
Community can be messy. It can really be messy. A lot of people just assume that it's not. But there's so many different things that a lot of community leaders are doing behind the scenes to keep the peace and for real collaboration to happen, because the biggest mistake about communication is that it happens. And to really truthfully be in collaboration, there's things you have to be willing to let go. There's things you have to be willing to compromise on. And a lot of times that's not the case. There's some people who just aren't going to compromise. They're not going to try to have a win-win or anything else like that. But then just as far as you get to a level of some influence or some stuff in your city or your town, especially if it's not a huge one, and you get a target on your back because everybody is watching, even your reactions on Facebook, you know, people will be screenshotting you on whatever you're doing. And, you know, so just knowing, you know, people will say you're a public figure, so you signed up for it, and that is what it is. But it doesn't mean there's still not some pain around that, or there's not some feelings around that to where people just assume they know you before they even know you or know anything about you.
A friend of mine worked for President Obama, and he said Obama would remind him that part of the job as the president is to absorb the pain. Mm. You know, and that's a difficult one, right? Because we're trained on so many different levels to resist pain, right? To sort of say like, oh no, I don't want that, as you said, baggage. I don't want that challenge. And yet we know the science is that when we open ourselves up to pain, we call that compassion, right? Mm. And when we feel compassion, we actually become more resilient. You know, recently I was just at Belinda's retreat center in Mount Shasta, Hestia, and there's snow on the ground and she's got this amazing river that runs through the property, and there's a cold plunge you can do. I've been totally good doing the cold plunge during the summer, you know, fall. Doing the cold plunge when there's snow on the ground is like a whole nother level of pain. But I was like, you know, the science is that it's good for you. And part of the practice is to not resist. Like your body goes into shock. You start hyperventilating when your body first goes in. And so part of the practice is to learn to just meditate and breathe into the cold, like to actually relax into the cold. And so what I hear this now, what I'm really hearing is just like, at that moment, you're just practicing compassion for your body. You're like, your toes are on fire, your fingers are on fire, and everything is saying, screaming, get out. And at the end of the week, I started off with like 30 seconds, 60 seconds in the river. By the end, I was in the river for over 6 minutes. Mm. And just really being able to absorb it. And I wonder, what would that look like if we opened ourselves up to like a cold river, like to community's pain? Like we could just, how do we hold ourselves open? And like, what kind of work do we need to do to build that compassion, to build that resilience?
You said something, Omar. And I just learned this week, but I want to share it because you're talking about compassion. The number one leadership trait, I found out what the number one leadership trait was, and they said it was empathy. Because through empathy, you set up the whole environment for engagement and all kind of other things. But they talked about that if somebody's at a company and the leader is empathetic, that it's like, I think it's a 73% increase that employees will not leave unless they just have to. But if there's a boss who is not empathetic, you know, there's only 13% of the people who might hesitate, but the other people, they'll just go. If you don't care about their lives, I didn't realize how much was inside of empathy. And from the StrengthFinders, empathy is in my top five strengths. My number one strength is activator. That's why I'm always activating. But I didn't realize that about empathy. So that made my week.
Well, and this, and part of what empathy, I'm assuming it's sort of a two way. It's not just being empathetic and listening to others. Part of it, and I assume the other side of the coin of empathy is probably vulnerability.
Absolutely.
And, you know, as you think about vulnerability as an opening to the good, the bad, the ugly, right? As you said, the vulnerability of going on the cardboard and showing off your dance moves, even if your friends might make fun of you, right? Is like, so even before kind of your inspiration, motivation, creation, connection, in there is vulnerability. Right. In there is an empathy for those who are willing to put themselves out there. How have you sort of experienced vulnerability in your life? And like, what has happened when you've been willing to be vulnerable? And what has happened when you've not been willing to be vulnerable?
It's why I am where I'm at now in my community, because of my vulnerability. I'm known for being, hence the name of Authentic Expressions. I'm known for being authentic and genuine. This is what, whenever people normally talk about me, that's one of the things that they'll say, because I share different things about my life. I share different things that some people might not share, and I'm very comfortable doing it. I really look to that voice on the inside when something is telling me it's time to speak on this. I'll speak on it. I mean, you know, I'll get an inclination and an intuition to share that. And I don't fight against that. I haven't fought against that for over 20 some odd years. I give myself pretty much, I say I've kind of had a rebirth in 1997 on a higher level of thinking. And because I was still introverted a little bit at that time, but, you know, I was being led to share more. So since then, I found being vulnerable when it's time to be vulnerable, not just being vulnerable just for the sake of it, but for the conversation and what the other people might need. Oh man, it's through my relationships and into orbit, you know. And when I wasn't authentic or shared or anything like that, my relationships would just go. I mean, people didn't really care to be around me because it was going to be all small talk. It wasn't going to be anything that, you know, gave them deeper insights about me. So I definitely believe vulnerability and, you know, being empathetic is definitely key to relationships, because you have to make an investment in order to make a withdrawal. So if you've never invested in somebody with information that they feel is close to you, then they probably don't feel you value them or trust them.
I love that. You have to make an emotional investment in order to make a withdrawal. So I want to just open up the space a little bit for you, SJ, and you can kind of listen to spirit if this moves you, but I'd love you talk a little bit about that poem and saying like, hey, there is some anger in there. I'm not angry at you, but there is anger in this poem. Would you want to share that poem with us now?
You know what? I can share that poem. I definitely can. This name of this poem is called I've Been Black All My Life. And the way that I'm going to do it is I'm going to do this little introduction. But basically, this is what I did for Authentic Expressions. This was during Black History Month. So this basically is explaining my experience of being a Black man. So, ladies and gentlemen, gather around, listen to the words that are about to astound from the depths of my soul. I come to you as a Black man. I've seen the world through different eyes. So listen as I share with you my point of view. So, I've been Black all my life. I'll be Black when I die. It's undeniable. It's not even a question. No one can say it's a lie. I've been Black all my life. My skin is dark in complexion. I've seen people lock their car doors. I've even seen people change their directions. Since I showed up being Black, I got a lot of attention. I got racially profiled. They said I fit the description. Now, being racially profiled, it's not always by the cops. There's government agencies out here that are guilty. Just look at some of the photo ops. Now, make sure you focus on Hispanics and the blacks. Make sure you focus on them. And if you see an Asian, by all means, get a picture taken, because that's going to add to this diversity campaign we fit in the spin. When you've been black all your life, it's not a movie, a game. Blacks got a certain swag to them. Don't nobody do it the same. The young black male is the most imitated demographic on the planet. They also the most endangered. They're getting shot dead, murdered where they standing. When you've been black all your life, it's an everyday thing to get looked at with disgust or disdain when you just out here on the scene doing your thing. If you're not black like me, then never use the word nigga, because a fella like me just might stand and deliver. And I've been black all my life, so I paid my dues. This is my experience through my eyes. These are my views. Now, I've been black all my life. You might be curious how it feels, but you're glad that you're not, if we're keeping it real, because it gets hot in the hot seat. You might be telling me that that's not the truth. But I'm one of those people who used to look at it for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But no longer do I feel I have to come over here and use my fist to keep it real. Because at the end of the day, black people have created a mass appeal. And that's for the cooking, for the culture, and all the different things that people have used. And you know, my whole life, I've had to stand in these shoes. But no longer will I fight racism with my fist. The only way to fight and win is to educate it. So that's it.
Thank you so much for sharing from your heart, you know, these truths. And that line always gets me about being imitated, you know, but then at the same time being despised. And this is, I think that's one of the great paradoxes of our time, right? Is this appropriation of culture and yet like a total dismissal of it at the same time.
I felt sadness in the pain of being a black man in the way that you expressed it. And I actually really appreciated that feeling that you shared with me. When you were talking about it in the previous context of anger, it was just interesting how for me, I felt the sadness and that was really powerful.
After I did that poem, there was some sadness in there. There's so many mixed feelings in there. But there's also different things I wanted people to understand and see, as far as, you know, my thoughts, you know, through my eyes, not anybody else's. But if there's something that I have to share with anybody out there, it would be this. Realize how important inspiration is in your life. Inspiration is the thread that weaves everything together, from the concept of an idea to the connection and experience of it being delivered. If anywhere in between there, between the inspiration, the motivation, the creation, the connection, or the experience part, then everything will fall flat. It just will. It just will. Because once you lose motivation, then you're not going to be ready to go through any of the setbacks, any of the challenges, any of anything. I think a lot of people don't realize how important being inspired is, because, you know, the mirror image, you know, when you're not inspired, you're going to be depressed. And it's hard to see which way is up when you're in that predicament. So a lot of times we'll hear inspiration and we think about the people like motivational speakers, when truthfully, inspiration is a positive belief in a potential future. And it's something that can help your life. And it's everywhere, but you got to look for it. And inspiration can strike anytime, but when it does, be ready for it.
One thing that we like to do with our listeners is we give them a little practice at the end of each episode. And for you, I'm inspired by how inspiration fuels your life. And I've definitely had moments in my life where I felt like flat, like there's nothing. Nothing can fertilize this this plant that I am. I just, you know, I'm not feeling it. And so I'm curious, how do you fertilize inspiration in your life, especially when you don't feel it, you know?
I've talked about inspiration, motivation, creation, and connection. Connection being that final piece. But when you cannot find inspiration, you start with connection. Because when you can exchange value with somebody who has a common interest with you, who you have a connection with, that's the life-giving energy that you need. You have to connect with people to be able to be inspired, because it won't happen by itself. If you have nothing, you can't just say, I'm going to be inspired. It won't happen. You have to get with a person, somebody, and through that connection is where the electricity can happen. So connection with people is the key to getting yourself to a point where you can even be inspired. So, yes. That's my answer.
What a powerful conversation. SJ speaks so clearly from his heart, which is why he's so inspiring, and then really is able to move from that inspiration to connection and then finding inspiration in connections. I love that sort of complete circle and representation of this beautiful artist.
What a potent way to respond to this prompt, right? If you were to simplify your life, what to keep is inspiration. What is the whole point of living without inspiration? So yeah, I hope you find some inspiration through your connections this week. Omar, I every single week I can count on you to bring me some inspiration. It's beautiful.
Yeah, his framework, inspiration to motivation to creation to connection. And it's just, I think I love the circular kind of energy that comes out of it. It has that regenerative approach to life. And that's what we want at Gratitude Blooming. We want to regenerate the life that we all deserve. This is our best lives, and it's together.
And if you are needing a little bit of that visual reminder in your physical space, you know, use the candle to light your curiosity around uncomfortable moments, or have the card that you want to live into standing by your desk. These are all ways to kind of cultivate inspiration in your life.
Enjoy all of these things at gratitudeblooming.com. Cheers.
Cheers.